Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vale, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is the Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Emily. Good to see you. Your office is looking, every time we get on here, it seems like it's more and more, there's additions to it. Like, I think, like, I don't know if there was that grandfather clock sort of shelf there.
No, it's I'm still in the process of moving in and then organizing how I want everything, which kind of changes every single day. So slowly coming together, feeling more settled in my new home.
Looks very homey. Like, it looks very, you know, comfortable. Looks very relaxing.
Yeah, the place that I'm in right now is so different from the previous place that I was in, and I'm so happy here. And it feels homier. My previous place was like super modern, really high ceilings throughout like the entire place, where here it just feels cozy. And it's incredible how much environment just kind of affects the way that feel.
Totally. Like, I know natural light is so important for me. And so I like to be facing a nice view or just anything to get some natural light. Like, it would be really hard, I think, because it affects your mood and your emotions and your motivation, all those things. It's really amazing.
I agree. Yep. I feel it 100%. Yeah. And so with all the natural light, how has your summer been?
Oh, I can't believe how quickly we're moving into summer. So good. Lots of, you know, graduations, kindergarten graduation, middle school graduation, piano recitals, like, you know, a lot of kids stuff. So it's been pretty busy. And yeah. And then, you know, when you have a bunch of people coming over for parties and stuff, I was mentioned to you, you know, like, things just start breaking down and all that kind of stuff. And it's a first world problem. It's just, the irony is so hilarious. Like, it's just, so it's life. But the main thing is everyone's healthy and happy. And my son, 16 years old, driving, managed to get in his first car accident with my car. So, and no one was injured, which was the most important thing, but it's written off. So we're down a car. So it's just been one of those times, you know, where there's a lot of events happening. So that's my life. How about you? Latest travels? Where have you been?
Latest travels. Actually just got back yesterday. I was up in Northern New Brunswick fishing for a couple of days, and actually fishing with Monica Adair, who has been a guest on the podcast before.
She's been a guest host too.
Yeah. And we had an incredible time. Her and I have been going up there. This was our third year in a row going up this time of year. And she finally hooked into and landed an Atlantic salmon. It was a really special, magical moment.
Congrats, Monica. What river are you on?
On the Restigouche River.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's so crazy that it is like, it's summer. You and I were chatting earlier of like how did it happen?
Yeah. We're not supposed to timestamp this, but we're obviously doing that. So it is summer. You know, we are enjoying and it's sunny today, and it has been raining like crazy, which is not bad if you're worried about forest fires, but not really, doesn't bring you to summer when it's kind of cold and wet, but no complaints. But we have a couple nice days. And I guess our guest will be coming to Atlantic Canada. She was mentioning in just a quick conversation, we should invite her in.
Yeah. So with that, Kira, welcome to the Boiling Point.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Hi. So you are calling in from Ontario, right?
I am. Yes, I am in Southern Ontario, the southernmost mainland tip of the country. It's in Leamington, Wrigley National Park. It's beautiful down here. Nice and warm.
Nice. And then heading to Nova Scotia tomorrow.
Yeah, I grew up in Nova Scotia. We were a military family. So most of my formative years were in the Annapolis Valley. And I'm going for a conference in member to First Nation the Canadian Association of Native Development Officers, and then visiting some friends.
Amazing. One of my most favorite things about hosting the Boiling Point is obviously the people that I get to meet and reading their bios, and then just having like so many questions of how, like even just what someone's role is and then the trajectory of what brought them into that career. So even with that being said, as you know, in the Boiling Point, we have our guests introduce themselves. So yeah, let's hear about Kira.
My name is Kira Knapp-Cole. I am the CEO of KLB Consulting, and KLB is an economic development consultancy. But what makes us really special and what warms my heart to the work that we do is that we're a values-based consultancy. So we work with organizations or businesses that are owned by or serve historically excluded folks, BIPOC, women, LGBTQIA plus community, and or businesses that have a sustainability mandate. So we get to show up every day, help make people's dreams come true, and do something impactful in a world that I think really needs regenerative development. And so it's the most fulfilling job that I could have ever imagined and well beyond my wildest dreams. And I have an amazing team underneath me and walking beside me that is doing some spectacular work.
Awesome. Maybe we'll start with what Emily was, you know, like that. The other thing is like the path to bring you to this place. Tell us a little bit about that. Like what was it? Like, this is a really interesting space to be in. And I don't think people probably grew up thinking this is what I want to be doing when I get older, or, you know, I kind of enter my career or whatever. So what brought you here?
University was really formative for me. I started out as a psych major, which lasted for about 14 and a half seconds. I took a history class, slavery in the Americas, and then a civil rights history class. And I cried every class. It was learning about the tragedies of slavery and what had happened and the generational impacts of sort of cultural genocide. I changed my major to history, and I focused really on civil rights and then eventually in Indigenous history and gender. So I was really impassioned about how I could learn about the past and do my part to ensure that it wasn't going to happen again, or that I could make an impact, or I could do something using particularly the privilege that I had as a white woman to amplify voices of those who had been excluded historically and tell stories that hadn't been told before. So that led me into a career in what I thought was a history job, but it turns out it was a job in economic development and tourism as the War of 1812 project facilitator for Southwestern Ontario. So the province had 7 facilitators for the commemoration of the War of 1812. And I fell in love with tourism. I fell in love with economic development. I got to meet lots of people. It was super dynamic. I worked with the communities, the Indigenous communities in Southwestern Ontario, to co-develop events and support the events that they're putting on and initiatives. And yeah, that really stuck with me. It led into a career in municipal government, which was not for me. It was, I think, probably being so values focused and so able to see systems of inequity, I realized very quickly that a lot of corporate systems are really entrenched in the patriarchy, in systemic sort of racism, colonialism, and it just felt like it was, the glass ceiling was real, I suppose. And I left the municipal government to work for a First Nation as their economic development officer. And that was just probably the most transformative career move that I ever made. So working for the First Nation was amazing and exciting. And then COVID sort of rocked everybody around me. I started during COVID there, but I could see so many people around me that were struggling, and there were supports available through funding, through strategic planning. And I had that skill set, and I realized that I had the opportunity to help those around me, not only in my own community of Leamington, but those who were disproportionately affected by COVID. So Indigenous businesses, BIPOC-owned businesses, LGBTQIA-owned businesses. And so I sort of took the leap and started my consultancy. And now it's been a whirlwind and a tornado and magical.
Yeah, it's amazing how we can find those like little bits of beauty and magic within what can sometimes feel like a complete giant tornado. And
yeah, absolutely. And you realize, I think, when you're in those moments of uncertainty, what is important to you and who is important to you. And if there are any positives that came out of COVID, is really helping people realize what is meaningful. And that was particularly evident in the tourism industry, because it was decimated and you saw amazing things happen environmentally or as a community. And this whole concept of community development that we've been pushing for so long really came to the forefront. And it was a really good opportunity for people to enter that space and support regenerative initiatives that help make the world better, help make the tourism industry a force for good. I can't say enough how transformative, yeah, COVID was for me personally on that path forward.
So the company was really born out of the pandemic and what you saw, you know, particularly disproportionately affected marginalized communities. And so as a result, you said, like, I got to do something here is what I'm guessing. And like, that's the origins of the company.
Yeah. I used to be a photographer, hilariously. So I was a wedding photographer, and KLB started as a photography company. We switched to branding. And then as part of branding, shooting photos, there were all these grants available. And I started writing the grants, and then my network kept growing and I became known as a grant writer. And then I realized that there was some massively transferable skills. So I had started out working, yeah, with some small businesses in the area on top of my full-time job as an economic development officer. And then the word of mouth spread and I started transitioning from photography. I started doing less and less and less of, and economic development I started doing more of. And I was fortunate enough to win a couple of great awards. And I think that sort of also propelled the business forward, because it lended some legitimacy to the work that we've been doing, my career path. And I think that really helped us. So I'm eternally grateful for groups like the Economic Development Council of Ontario that gave me that award. And because I really think that it helped move us forward and shift us.
That was top 10 economic development professionals. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
Thank you.
It's funny. My company, Vision Coaching, was given an award. I don't know. I can't say we won it necessarily. I think there's a little bit of subjectivity, at least in this, through the Board of Trade. And it was, to your point, was really helpful, you know, and it's important to celebrate who's doing kind of neat things in the community. And for us, it was an emerging award. So it was just kind of put us on the radar. I'm guessing something similar for you, but that's the value in, for me personally, and of what I've seen and how, why I want to support that. But you saw that as a little boost for you is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And I think the work that was being celebrated was work that I was doing on behalf of the community that I was working for at the time. And really it's their ideas. It's their work. I just helped facilitate it. And I feel very comfortable. The award was a little bit, not unnerving. It was uncomfortable for me because my role has always been as a support person. Like, I just helped facilitate making my clients' dreams come true. So that was a really humbling, I suppose, moment where I'm like, oh, this is very cool, but I would never be there without the ideas and the dreams and the follow through and the operational support of the organizations and the folks that I work for. So it's been a whirlwind and really, really beautiful to be a part of this whole world and have the trust of the folks that I work with in order to take their business, sort of wrap my arms around it. And I become really a part of what they're growing. And that's really meaningful to me.
Well, and also being awarded one of Business Elite's top 40 under 40 recipients, which, first and foremost, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was wild.
Yeah. Well, and so with that, in this, like, you know, the power of being recognized and being given those awards. And I'm curious as to, like, when you accept that, because, like, that is you, what are those things that you now recognize? Or maybe not just now, but have recognized within yourself that makes it so that you are awarded that.
I think I have a spirit of community. I think that's probably my superpower. I view opportunities, challenges as opportunities, I really believe in building partnerships. I've had the extreme benefit of having a group of really, really powerful, strong women that are executive level women, and we support each other and leverage one another's brilliance. And I think that I've just always approached things from a community over competition spirit. I recognize that I have, again, I've come into this world with an absolutely extreme amount of privilege, and that I have a responsibility as a person of privilege to amplify stories from and use my privilege for good, I suppose, or to take a step back when needed and support the work of people that are doing. So I really feel that's probably my superpower, is just being able to build those partnerships, look at the positive side of things. I think it's very easy in business to figure out all the ways that something won't work, but I think I have like an unnatural like lack of fear about taking risks. And in my own business with my clients, I think that I'm eternally positive and looking for ways, like if you can't do something, who else in your circle can, that you can leverage.
Yeah, I love that. I love that spirit of community. Like for people who, because I mean, like I know firsthand how important community is, and you hear so many people talk about that, but like, what are some ways that like you have been able to get yourself to a place where you are surrounded by the right people?
Aggressive friendship making has been, I'm an aggressive friend maker. So when I see somebody, you know, when you just feel that spark with somebody, I really try to throw the reservations to the side, and I'm really forward, like, hey, I really think you're fantastic and I would really like to be your friend, or I'd like to collaborate with you, or I think you're brilliant. And I always think that compliments shouldn't stay in your head. Like you should give people compliments when they're due, or even if they're a stranger. My best friend, he and I used to, when we were in university, would stop random strangers in the street and like give them a compliment if we felt it. So we just felt like, you know, you never know when you're going to make somebody's day. But I think honestly, like it's this aggressive friend making. And funny you asked the question, because a colleague of mine, he calls my group of girlfriends the Tourism Brat Pack. And he asked the same question, like, how do you get people into your group? And I said, oh, we just aggressively make friends. And I think it's just being supportive of one another and realizing that you have so much more to gain from working with people. And unfortunately, particularly as women, we have been told for so long that there's only so much room for successful women. And that's driven by the patriarchy. It's driven by capitalism. And it's not true. There's enough room at the top for everybody. And it gets lonely at the top if you don't lean on the people around you that think like you and that support you. So I think we're revolutionizing, I like to say it in my little group, or a group of disruptors, and we're revolutionizing the way that women exist in a corporate environment. And I cannot explain to people enough how important it is to surround yourself with people who uplift you and support you and think like you.
Yeah. And the level of confidence that it takes to be that way, of just saying like, hey, like sometimes, you know, of like you meet someone and you're like, yeah, we're friends.
I don't know if it's confidence or just like dumb luck and lack of fear or a combination of all of it. But you know, what's the worst they can say is no.
It's funny you asked that, Emily, because I was thinking the same thing. To me, that takes a lot of confidence. And I'm just curious about the source of that confidence. Like where was that? Is this just part of your DNA? Did that come about? And I ask that because I'm watching my daughters grow up, and it's just interesting to see. And it's probably not just, it might have been my son as well. It's just my daughters are younger, but you know, they're in that stage of life where they're dancing and everything is, they're feeling very free. And then all of a sudden something starts shifting, right? And then become a little more aware of just things that as a parent you think are irrelevant, right? It's important to them though. And you kind of see this little dip in, you know, these waves. And it's not all of us really, but I'm just wondering if you look back at your life, where does that come from? Because I agree with Emily that maybe it's being naive, but I think it's a lot of being very confident.
A lot of hard work. I grew up very overweight. I was bullied mercilessly as a kid. I was always, happy and sort of like a little bit of a care bear, like just kind of showed up and with a smile on my face, always very sensitive and sort of emotionally intelligent, but a lot of work. Yeah, I work with a business coach. I work with my therapist. I do a lot of self-compassion work. I certainly realize there's a difference between self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-worth. And that's something that I work on really daily. I put the work in and it's taken a long time. Like I'm almost 40 now, and I can't say that I necessarily brought that to the table when I was younger. I was a people pleaser. I've always been a people pleaser, and learning boundaries has been really important. But yeah, I think in my generation, it's different, I think, than my parents' generation, where it's really celebrated, like doing that work on yourself and leaning into supports that are available. But yeah, I mean, it hasn't been an easy road. I have a pretty severe generalized anxiety disorder. I struggled with substance abuse when I was in my 20s. It took a lot of work. And I think now just having a really good sense of who I am as a person and what is meaningful to me. And if I approach somebody with that spirit of kindness and spirit of reciprocity and love, and that's not returned, then that's a reflection of them more than a reflection of me. But I think it took me a really long time to get there.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing all of that and for being so open with us and with all the listeners in that. And, you know, it's like I often, you know, as a coach, think of like, we can only take others as far as we're willing to go ourselves. And with you having this spirit of community and wanting to build up others so much, but it's like you're able to do that because you have done the work and continue to do the work within yourself and just the power of that. And yeah, amazing.
There's some great resources out there as well. There's an amazing self-compassion workbook by Kristen Neff. I would highly recommend it to anybody who struggles with that. I'm really hard on myself, and it's taken a lot of work to be okay with making mistakes. And especially as a CEO, as a consultant, where people pay me to tell them what to do, essentially, and have a team underneath of me. That's something that I think is really important, just being graceful with yourself. And it also helps to be graceful with the people around you and build a culture that allows people to make mistakes and learn from them. I think that's just so important.
That's awesome. Because I mean, people forget, right? Like, you know, like you see someone who's winning awards and being successful, and you just assume they've always been that way, or that's sometimes the stories we tell ourselves, right? And yet we've all had these incredible journeys, and I appreciate you sharing some of the ups and downs, because that's very helpful. Because I'm sure someone listening to it is thinking, oh, I can relate to that, you know, or maybe I'm on the downswing, right? And things will come back, right? But it's that constant work.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So you do a lot of work with DEI in the economic development landscape. So just an interesting kind of convergence. And I'm just curious about how that, I guess maybe two passions came together, how you recognize the opportunity there?
I think that for too long, economic development has been broken. I remember attending a training session, and the person who was leading it said, "It's just all about making cash registers ring." And I came home and I said to my partner, "I don't know if this is the career for me. Like, that just doesn't feel good to me. There's so much more than making money." It felt gross, kind of like it just felt icky for me. And I had an incredible mentor. He's actually out of the Gaspro Valley now in Nova Scotia, Celeste Devar. And he ran a session with our regional tourism organization called Ontario Southwest about experiential tourism development. And it was a community-based approach to tourism, to economic development. We looked at what's called donut economy, which really is rooted in sort of an Indigenous economic development philosophy. And that changed my life. I was able to I live in Leamington, which if anybody that's listening is familiar with Leamington, Leamington is the greenhouse capital of North America. So we have 30,000 people. And then at any given time, an additional 7,000 to 12,000 international workers that come from Mexico, Jamaica, Thailand. So our community is really diverse. It's amazing. It's vibrant. But with the seasonality of the workers, the disparity in income, it's disproportionately men. It does create some socioeconomic challenges in the community. And when I started working for the municipality, I realized there's an opportunity to highlight what made this community so beautiful, which was its diversity. And I really enjoyed the opportunity to help coach people to tell their own stories. I wasn't telling it for them. I wasn't in front of the spotlight. I was sort of the guide on the side instead of the sage on the stage, I suppose. And that really opened my eyes to how I could play a supportive role. And then the DEI work it's interesting because there's a lot of debate about the role that white people play in diversity, equity, and inclusion. As a career path, should we be teaching it and really listening? And what we have found with KLB is that procurement policies and procedures, so if they're going to RFP for those, are inherently biased. So BIPOC folks are less likely to be awarded contracts. People who don't have English sounding names are less likely to be awarded contracts. They're given less opportunities. And then that just keeps this endless cycle going where you see these huge firms that are recycling the same sort of material, they're winning because they keep getting awarded these things. So what we did as an organization was worked together with a group of really strong, amazing, capable folks who have lived experiences as people of color, as people in the accessibility world, Indigenous women, queer folks. And we came together as like this collaboration or this cooperative, I suppose. And my role in DEI has always been sort of helping the pieces move, like organizing the conferences or making sure that the parts were moving. But I always feel like my role is to take a step back and allow the people with those lived experiences to take the stage and be paid appropriately for that knowledge and that work. That's really, really important. To answer your question more effectively, it's just so important. It's so important if you want to look at what a regenerative economy looks like, is that everybody's voice has a place. Everybody's voice is important and everybody is a part of your community. And we have an opportunity to do things different and do things better. And whether that be like from a DEI perspective or a climate change perspective, the data is there to support that type of work. So our system is broken. It has been broken for a long time. COVID highlighted that. And it just takes people doing the work, like every day doing the work, slugging it out. And I think we just need to have more of us coming along.
And have conversations like this, right? Where you can share things that maybe people aren't aware of, right? The RFP process, I think it's inherently broken personally as a small business owner. With having the privilege I have, without having some of the barriers, it's still really hard to compete. You know what I mean? And we were recently awarded something that I know 10 years ago we could do the work. We just didn't have the systems in place to deal with the complexity of getting through this process to the other end, you know? And then I find it really challenging when it gets to the federal government. So that's been my own personal experience, you know, having a very Canadian sounding name and all those sorts of things, right? So I can just imagine. So I love that you're tackling that from an economic development side, because like leveling the playing field is the idea of an RFP process, but it actually, I found exactly the opposite. You know, the, you know, kind of big four win typically all the time because they have proposal writing, RFP writing, you know, people that's their focus, right? So what an interesting thing to tackle and shed light on. Holy cow.
I have a very interesting anecdote about one time where I think our approach is almost there, but it didn't quite work. We had interviewed to do a strategic plan for an organization and in a similar collaborative model. And when we got into our interview, I think it was down to us and one other company. They were like, how disruptive are you? Like, how progressive are you? So it was evident to me, and it made me feel okay with the fact that we didn't get awarded that contract, because I felt like there are people in the world that really genuinely want to see change in their organizations. And then there are people who say they want to see change in their organization so long as it doesn't actually affect anything in their organization. And that made it really easy for me to sort of swallow the pill of if we don't get something, because that's not who I want to be working with. And that's not who I want to align my values with. And increasingly, we're seeing more and more people, particularly at like a middle level of management, that are really committed to doing the hard work in their organizations.
Yeah. You spoke of experiential tourism. What do you mean by that?
Oh my goodness, I could talk about experiential tourism all day. So experiential tourism is different than being a tour guide or having somebody come into your community and sort of be exploitative. What it is it's community-based. It is rooted in storytelling. It is where you work with folks in your community to host visitors. So it's high yield, which means that they run longer, they're more expensive, they're low volume. So it's not based on, for a long time in the tourism industry, it was about tourism receipts. Like, how many people can you get to your location? You see that in places like Niagara Falls. Or in the summer, I went to high school in Collingwood, which is right beside Wasaga Beach in Ontario. It's a huge tourist beach. And people would come from the city with a picnic basket full of food. Their tank was full of gas, and they would sit on the beach for the whole day, free parking. They would leave their garbage on the beach and they would leave. They didn't put anything into our economy. It was a drain on not only our resources, but it created a conflict between the locals and tourists, which I'm sure you see in any tourist town. But this is really experiential tourism is a way to combat that. So you're using champions in your community, storytellers in your community to host people. Their stays will be longer. They will spend more in your community. And they're the type of people that align with that community development values. So you're building a population of visitors that are leaving your community better than it was when they arrived. I can give you some great examples of some tourism experiences.
What are some examples? So yes, please do.
So one of the experiences that we developed this year, we worked with Haldimand County, which is a county sort of adjacent to Hamilton in Ontario, about an hour and a half drive from Toronto. And we worked with four operators to develop experiences from idea to implementation. One of them is called the Victorian House Guest Experience. So there's a historical home. It has been operating like what you would see as a traditional museum for a really, really long time. And that has been a challenge for them financially, keeping the doors open, keeping consistent staff. So we worked with them for this Victorian House Guest Experience. You walk in, you're greeted with somebody in an attire, period appropriate attire. You bake a loaf of bread, a hop spread with them. And this is based on hops that used to be grown on the property back in the day. And then you get a chance while your bread is in the oven, you get to go upstairs and make a seed wreath, which was a way that they would have preserved seeds at the time. I don't want to give away too much of it, but you make this wreath and it's really hands-on. You get to use some of the old, we call it VR, Victorian reality, some of the video cards that actually would have been used during the day. And then you sit down and you get to eat some of this bread, and then you have a high tea and there's a harpist playing. And so it's a 3 to 4 hour experience where you just really get to immerse yourself in that story, in that history. It's hands-on, it's tactile. It's aligned with, if anybody here is a teacher or has young children, like that's how kids learn nowadays. That's how we all learn, is tactile, experiential. It's been in the education landscape for so long, and it's just shifting those philosophies into the tourism landscape. And people are willing to pay for these experiences. My favorite line is, what's ordinary to you is extraordinary to somebody else. So one of our experiences is an amazing chef, Rabia. She runs an Indian experience. So you get to cook with her. You get to eat with her and dance and listen to stories about how she ended up coming from India to rural Haldimand County. What does local mean to her? And yeah, you get to learn about people, and you feel like you're being led into their world, that they're really hosting you. You're a guest in their home, in their business. And it's pretty powerful stuff.
Do you know what I find really fascinating about that, Kira? Like, and I love experiential. I never really thought of it, that term, but I love the experience personally. What I found interesting is I grew up in the Yukon Territory, and Dawson City's got some amazing things, you know, historically, you know, around the Indigenous people and around the gold rush and all this sort of stuff. So I'd lived there for years, and it wasn't until I brought a friend up with me that I had a lot of these experiences being a local. Like, I just wonder how many, you know, and how many experiences I'm missing in New Brunswick as an example, right? Just because you start to live and you start to get used and you drive by things and you don't actually experience them the same way. So, you know, it's not only people coming, but I think there's probably an opportunity for that local tourism, experiential tourism.
Yeah, 100%. In my community, 77% of our visitors are called VFR, so visiting friends and relatives. So when they're coming to visit, we can take them. And there's so many things even in my community that I didn't know about, or I wouldn't have known about if I wasn't directly plugged into the tourism industry. And great resources for that are your destination marketing organizations or your regional tourism organizations. So plug into those and put on your tourist hat for a day and figure out what your guests really like. I'm a huge foodie. I could eat. All of my trips are based around food. So I know that I want to look for culinary experiences when I go. I'll do anything as long as it comes with food. So yeah, that's what I plug into. I plug into food. I know all my friends are foodies, and it's been a really great, not only good way to explore my community, but build relationships with people.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I had family here last weekend from Scotland, and they were talking about everything that they've been doing in Atlantic Canada, and the majority of what they have done, I was like, oh, can you tell me about that? Because, which, and I think that I've explored locally, but no, there's still so much more that has not been tapped into. Do you work primarily with Tourism Ontario, or?
I work with tourism operators around the country. So I used to be a business advisor for Indigenous Tourism Ontario. Right now, I'm a mentor for Indigenous Tourism British Columbia. I work with municipalities, First Nations, Indigenous owned and operated nonprofits. Most of my clients are in Ontario just by virtue of us having only been in business for a year. And now all of a sudden I have like a group in British Columbia. And so it's been spreading quite quickly. And yeah.
Do you find that clients mostly find you, or you find them?
Yeah, mostly they find me. And that probably has a lot to do with the fact that I work in an Indigenous landscape, word of mouth, building that trust relationship, particularly as a white person. Consultant is a bad word in a lot of communities. Like it has a long history of people coming in and really taking advantage of communities. So I take that trust that I have with the clients that I work with, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, but I take it really, really seriously. And I know that word of mouth is paramount. I've been lucky that a lot of folks have come to me that being said, I still bid on things. There are still projects that I'm trying to get my foot in the door with different levels of government, if that works for me, or there's still procurement policies and procedures that I need to follow. But yeah, I think that it's been a word of mouth thing. The tourism industry and economic development industry is also quite small. On a national level, you'd be surprised at how many people know one another. So sitting in your integrity, making sure that you're making choices that align with your values, I think has been really, really integral to the success of KLB.
Awesome. Well, I love hearing, references are the best source of new business. It means you're doing good work and establish trust very quickly, because that's extended trust. So yeah, that's an awesome way to get new business. So how do people find out more about you and what you do? And if we have listeners that are interested in hiring KLB or just would like to talk to you, how do they reach out to you?
They can check out our website at klbconsultants.ca. They can reach out to me by email, kira@klbconsultants.ca. We have four areas that we specialize in. One is economic development, so business planning, strategic planning, grant writing, and reporting. We are advisors to the Canadian Digital Adoption Program. So if people want to have technological adoption or experiential tourism development and tourism development. So those are sort of the four key areas that we focus on. So they can reach out to me, talk about their project, talk about what their needs are, and we will host a call with them and see if we're a good fit for one another.
Amazing. Thank you. And so at the end of each podcast episode, Dave and I do takeaways. And so, Dave, what is your takeaway from this conversation with Kira?
there's a few. What really landed for me is just, you know, the journey that Kira described, you know, getting to where she's at in terms of when we asked her about confidence. And I mean, there's all these other kind of offshoots, but that in particular just really landed, because it is a journey, and it's hard work. And I love when people share that, because I think that's, you know, it's a bit of a roadmap for other people. So for me, that was most impactful.
Yeah, that definitely stood out for me as well. What comes first to my mind is around the experiential tourism, but just experiences in general, and how, you know, even in you saying just towards the end there about how it's like the tourism community nationally is so small. And it's like, when you just go in and kind of experience one thing, then what it opens yourself up to. And so even to go and experience a Victorian home and the way that they learn how to make bread, and you're just taking that one experience, but then ultimately, like, all of the experiences from that moment that then will come from just going and exploring one little thing, and really maybe even like, how much do we even allow ourselves the opportunity to, and now I'm kind of really just looking inward at that, of like, how much do I allow myself to really just kind of fully experience something? It's like, yeah, go and like, I remember going and seeing like the Empire State Building, and you're like, okay, I saw it. Like, now what? How long do I look at it? How long do I instead of like, yeah, what ultimately do you really want to be experiencing in it? So food for thought for me, that is for sure.
Awesome. So I guess you do the...
So we're going to list all of Kira's information and any extras we discussed in the show notes. And the best place to find all of that is on our website, which is boilingpointpodcast.com. We are active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. And this is recorded, so you can see the video version on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, our podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. So Kira, thank you so much for sharing your time with us, for giving us the experience of fully being able to experience Kira and what it is that you are doing. And for ultimately, I think, just being you, and then being able to then show up for the community and everyone else. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Kira.
Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app, or visit boilingpointpodcast.com for more.
Hi. Hi, I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.